I hadn't planned on preaching today. I'm pretty much practicing what I'm about to preach about, which is just doing it. And so my message today is called Just Do It. And Pastor Keith probably was also a little taken aback because I texted him literally as I was leaving church last Sunday, and I said, "Do you have anybody preaching next Sunday? Because I think I have a word for the group." And he's like, "Sure, I guess." And he was like, "Oh, I was a little caught off guard by it because I don't usually ask to preach. By the way, God might be changing that." Yeah. So what I wanted to do was just recap kind of all the things that have been kind of planted and sowed into us in the last pretty much month and a half or so. For everybody who's been here throughout all of these sermons, you know, we first had Pastor Jonathan who talked about our spiritual wellness and giving us a gut check. So that a man thinks in his heart is so is he. And so he really asked us to, you know, check ourselves in a sense. You've got Pastor Gina who talked about Moses, who was a stutterer and basically told us, with what you have right now, with all the things that you already have in terms of your talents and your gifts, you have exactly what you need to have to be able to minister to other people and to be able to bring forth his word into the world. You got Pastor Jenny. If you haven't listened to her sermon on podcast, I think she made me cry as I was on my way driving home to work when I was listening to her podcast. It's a really heartfelt message about being able to use us in our brokenness and in our weakness and all the things that we've gone through that have really made us the people that we are today. And even though that we still may be broken or that we still may be dealing with the things that have really, again, she uses the word snowballed from us in the past, that we're still being able to be used for his glory. And then you've got Pastor Deb. And what's cool about this is, of course, Pastor Deb and I work together. I have the blessing to be able to call her my friend, my coworker, my teammate, my ministry partner, and you know, I guess that's why we kind of worked on the same vibe this past week, is that she talked about creativity and being able to open your eyes and run to God with your hands wide open. Being creative and having the ability to be what is known as incarnate, and getting your hands dirty. And if you guys don't know what incarnate means, it means to embody the Spirit of God in human form, is to embody a deity. And she's talking about the Spirit of God in human form. And being able, like children, just running to your mommy and your daddy and being able to just love on him and being felt that love. And so we talk about getting hands dirty. And so Pastor Deb talked about, okay, let's get dirty. And throughout that entire time, I thought about all the different sermons. I said, you know, all of our pastors and Pastor Keith, he's prayed over all of us, you know, several times over and over each and every week. The pastors have continued to sow into us all these words and all these messages. And basically, we've been given these marching orders. And so while Pastor Deb was preaching, I thought about a carrot. Who likes carrots? Okay, I don't, okay? So I actually don't like carrots. Danny will tell you. I like the little baby ones. You know, anything little baby is I like. Push them on the side or give them to Danny if I don't like them, along with mushrooms and all those root things. Beets, I don't like beets at all. Ooh. And so for God to show me a carrot, I was like, all right, you're really pushing yourself, God, with this. And so does anybody know how carrots are grown? You guys know they come out of the ground, right? And I put myself in terms of being a carrot. And while Pastor Deb was talking about getting dirty, she's talking about, I'm thinking about being harvested as a carrot. So how carrots are grown is they have to be planted in the sunny places. So they can't have shade. They have to be like in super sunny places for them to grow. The type of soil that they have to be planted in has to be soft soil. And so I thought about, okay, well, now it's harvest time. And so this farmer is about to pull this carrot from its carrot top and yank it out of the ground when it gets harvested. And so as a carrot, I was like, oh no. I loved my dirty place. I loved being in there. I loved being like cozy in my dirt. It was so soft. And little does that carrot know, little do you guys know, that that carrot, of course, has all these cool vitamins that we're supposed to be partaking in when you eat carrots. I thought about us being harvested. It's harvest time. It's August, September, October. You know, if anybody knows about the farming season, these are usually times when you get to be harvested. And as vegetables, you're being harvested and you're being pulled out of the ground, and then you're ready to be eaten and being able to be served by other people. So yeah, you guys are all carrots. I thought about all the things that could hinder us from being able to be used and being able to be the awesome carrots that we are, or the to be able to be used really by God. The first I put here was, we think we don't know what to do or how to do something. How many of you feel sometimes, and not all the time, that you are inadequate to talk about God? That is not true. You don't need necessarily to have an amazing seminary or theological degree to talk about God. What you need to have is a heart to do it. Some of the most amazing testimonies and amazing things that we've seen in this church, or even out there across the world here, are people who are telling about themselves and what God is doing in their lives. So if you're scared to talk about God, you already know how to. All you have to do is just tell him what he's doing in your life. It doesn't have to be all like King James Version. You might bore people, actually. But you already know how to do something. Gina already said, what you have, you already know how to do. By the way, like some of the things that y'all can do, I cannot do it. Like I was just talking to Trent this week, and he is apparently an amazing contractor and builder and stuff like that. If y'all had me trying to build something, I guarantee you I would break it. And if I'm trying to build it from the ground up, I'm telling you, I would still break it. If it doesn't even exist, I would probably break it. Imagine those gifts that he has. He can already reach the people that I can't reach. Same deal for you guys. You have the gifts and talents that I and Pastor Deb or Pastor Keith can't go out and reach. So that was the first thing, is what the first hindrance. We don't know what to do. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. The second is, we're frozen in prayer. We are frozen in prayer sometimes. We pray and pray and pray, and we don't do anything. How many times have you guys sat around and you've prayed all week and you actually heard what God told you to do, and you just didn't do it? We know what we're supposed to do, but we just don't do it. The third is, we have fear. In 2 Timothy 1:7, God says, for I've not given you a spirit of fear, but of a sound mind, of power, love, and a sound mind, or self-discipline. And so many times, we're scared to do something. We're scared to step out in faith because we think somebody's going to think this way about me. Who cares? Who cares? What's the worst thing that could happen? Your pride is hurt. My feelings are hurt. Really, guys? Is it really that way? Is your pride worth that much? Than being able to minister and actually move forward God's kingdom. Come on. The fourth is, we think we're unworthy. Look at this kid. Seriously. She's an amazing example today. She's just running towards us. Towards God. Keep going. She has no concept of what worthy or unworthiness is. These social conceptions of we're too brown, we're too white, we're too skinny, we're too fat, we're too whatever it may be. But in all realness, who says we're not unworthy. It's us. It's so much in society. We compare ourselves to things on Facebook or social media, to TV. Daniela, she was saying that we were having a conversation. She got back from Honduras last night, and she was saying that people in Honduras don't have TVs. We were talking about, how do they know what they want? Like, how are they going to know about an iPhone when they don't see other people having it? You are worthy. The next is not right timing. We say to ourselves, oh, it's not time yet. I'm not ready yet. So I'm just going to wait some more. Knowing darn well that God has already told you what to do. Premise is, you guys have already prayed already about these things, right? So these are things that God's already called you to do or told you to walk through, and then you're hindering yourself in doing it. And then, not my place. The not my place, and many of you guys have actually seen this, it's actually an inscription. It's a poem by a German Christian pastor. And he actually wrote this during the German rise and regime during World War II. So I actually have a history degree. And one of my things that I had to do to graduate was I had to write 30 to 60 page papers about certain things. And it just so happened that one of the 60 page papers that I wrote was the rise and fall of the Nazi regime in World War II. How they rose, how they fell, and why they fell. This poem actually really speaks out to me because it says, first they came for the socialists and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unions, unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me and there was no one left to speak for me. This guy actually was a German Christian pastor who actually supported the Nazis. He was actually one of the pastors who supported their regime. And then as soon as he started figuring out, like, this is something that we didn't want or that he was actually opposing, they threw him into Dachau. If any of you guys know about World War II history, Dachau is one of the largest concentration camps. He was there for 3 years. Up until 1945, until he was actually freed by the U.S. allies. And I say this in that you can actually put anything in here. For they came for the transgendered people, for they came for the lesbians, for they came for the gays, for they came for the brown people, they came for the Filipinos, they came for the people from Hiawassee. But there was no one to speak for me. This is a hindrance of it's not my place or it's not the right timing. Then really check yourself. When is the right timing? When is it your place? I'm going to be really straightforward here as I go through this message. I first want you guys to realize that we are all made in the image of Jesus. It says here in Romans 28:28-30, and this is the message, and it says, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. For those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son. I'll go back on 29. So for those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. And those he predestined, he also called. Those he called, he also justified. Those he justified, he also glorified. You guys have to understand that he has called us in his image. But in order for us to really understand what he's called us to do, we also have to understand who Jesus was. We also have to understand, like, what he actually did into the world and how he actually empowered the disciples to be able to create a movement that's lasted over 2,000 years. And then as people, you guys should also know that we are also called to seek justice. It says, learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed. I don't know about all of you guys, but I think all of us in here have been somewhat oppressed in our lives. And it says, we are called to defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. Did you guys know Jesus, not only was he a carpenter, but if you actually looked at what his actual career was, you can call him a social activist. Jesus, in his right, was a social activist. He actually, if you look at the definition of social activist, it's someone who's actively involved in a protest or a political or social cause can be called an activist. Demonstrations, strikes, sit-ins are all the ways that activists might work toward the change they believe in. What's social activism? It's an intentional act with the goal of bringing about social change. If you feel strongly about a cause and are working towards a change, you could be considered an activist. An activist is anyone who is fighting for change in society. Do you guys think, based on what we know in the Bible, that Jesus was trying to incur change into the world? Yes. Because we're made in the image, don't you think that because Jesus can do that, we can also do that? What do you guys passionately believe in? And this is really something that I want you to pray about and think about. And if not, God's already called you to. And if you could, you know the answer, God's already told you. What are you passionate about? What breaks your heart? What makes you stand up here and when they're praising and worshiping God, what breaks your heart to change the world? Why do we need this power, this Jesus, so-called power, the Spirit of God, if we're not going to change the world? Are we just going to keep it to ourselves? That's not what we're called to do. What are you passionate about? There's got to be something greater. What did he actually do? So we talk about what would Jesus do. We all had those bracelets back into the 1990s or the 2000s. He taught compassion. When you read the New Testament, he actually taught sit-ins. He taught on the lake. He taught in the temples. He actually did sit-ins. He protested the Pharisees and Sadducees. He protested the law. But he also taught compassion. When everybody else was walking by the unhealed or the unclean or the prostitutes, he actually came up and talked to these people. He healed these people. When everybody else said, no, I don't want to be any part of them, he was the one who broke that wall down. He broke that barrier and he actually went out to those people. He healed. He healed just by walking. A person who was bleeding for 13 years just heard about Jesus and said, if I could just touch his cloak, just a little piece of his cloak, I know and I have the faith that I'm going to be healed. Why can't we walk somewhere and just the Spirit radiates off of us and we start to heal and break barriers? Jesus was always teaching, so he's teaching his disciples. He was teaching pretty much everybody who came across him. Like, you read his parables. The disciples would ask him a question, and then, I hate when this happens, but he asked the same question back to them just in a different way. But he's always continued to teach. And then he loved his disciples. Part of this, he loved, he served, he washed his disciples' feet. He got the washbowl, he got the cloth, he got on his two knees and began to wash his servants' feet. Guys, this is what true servanthood is we follow what Jesus, it's not from the top down, it's from the bottom up. If we start to serve the people we don't even like.
Come on. Come on. Hallelujah. That's it.
And we start to serve those people, when we talk to those people, we don't have to agree, but we can certainly agree to disagree. But you still pray for them and you start continue to serve them and you tell them about what Jesus is doing in your lives. I guarantee you, you're going to continue to plant seeds, plant things that they didn't even know that you were even planting. One of our clients, she had a really unfortunate situation, but she's a Muslim woman, and she's been a client for a few years now. Usually when she comes in, I'm really trying to like rush her out the door because she can be there for like 2 or 3 hours if we don't kind of keep her focused. But this one time she came in and our meeting, you know, ended a little shorter than usual. And God was like, Christina, you need to pray for her. I said, okay, all right, God, let me go get Deb. So I said, all right, God, I'll be back. Let me actually grab Deb. She might be a good person. And Deb and I went in, and we prayed for this Muslim woman, 5-10 minutes. And that is serving somebody who you don't agree with. But we talked about God. We talked about Jesus. We talked about peace. We talked about healing. And I know that God's working in her life. And I know that God's doing something. And if she keeps coming back, she keeps coming back for no reason. I know that God has something for us to instill in her. The same Spirit who created the earth and walked with Adam, the same Spirit who brought Jesus from the dead, the same Spirit who helped Jesus raise a dead girl to life, is actually the same Spirit who dwells in us. Can you guys grasp that, please? Just think about it, because it took me a few weeks to actually think through this. Is the same Spirit who walked with Adam and started the world, the same Spirit who brought Jesus back from the dead, is the same Spirit who lives in us. Then why can't we also walk on water? Now, I'm not telling you guys jump off the bridge or whatever, go skydiving, don't do that. But I am telling you to walk in the Spirit of God and to act like you're walking on water, because you can do it. You can change the world just like Jesus and 12 disciples changed the world. Why do we sit back and watch the news or we watch, you know, Facebook, CNN, USA Today, whatever? Why are we sitting back behind the computer screen? Why can't we be out at the organizations or the meetings or the, you know, the Bible studies or in the businesses and doing what we're supposed to be doing, which is ministering to the world, showing them that we're the salt of the earth? Jesus didn't hesitate when he told Peter to walk on water with him. He actually just said one word. He just said, come. To kind of give you guys also historical context, it says Matthew 6:1-6. It says, be especially careful when you're trying to be good so that you don't make a performance out of it. It might be good theater, but the God who made you won't be applauding. When you do something for someone else, don't call attention to yourself. You've seen them in action, I'm sure. Placators, I call them. Treating prayer meeting and street corner alike as a stage. Acting compassionate as long as someone is watching. Playing to the crowds, they get applause. True, but that's all they get. When you help someone out, don't think about how it looks. Just do it. Quietly and unobtrusively. That is the way your God, who conceived you in love, working behind the scenes, helps you out. And when you come before God, don't turn into a theatrical production either. All these people making a regular show out of their prayers, hoping for stardom. Do you think God sits in a box seat? Here's what I want you to do. Find a quiet, secluded place so you won't be tempted to role play before God. Just be there simply and honestly as you can manage. The focus will shift from you to God, and you will begin to sense his grace. It says, just do it. You don't need to announce what you're doing. Before Facebook, nobody announced where they were going or where they checked in, right? And it's okay. Facebook gets a lot of great messages out. I'm not poo-pooing on Facebook. But we don't need approval from everybody else. We don't need approval to minister and talk about God and to walk on water. If I'm going to walk on water, I'm going to walk on water whether you're with me or not. Just do it. Your action steps. So first, if you're going to do something, put it in your calendar. Put it somewhere and write it somewhere so that it actually happens. Deb knows if she wants me to do something, she's got to put it somewhere that it's going to remind me or something, because if I tell her and we don't put it somewhere, it's not going to happen. There's a ton of distractions in the world. Good or bad distractions. There are stuff that we have to think about and do every single day. But if something that God is calling you to do, put it somewhere and go actually do it. Take an hour of your week and work on it. The second is meet with people or organizations. So many of us have a whole bunch of Facebook friends that we, again, probably don't agree with. Why not meet with them? So I don't want you to talk at them. So the downfall is, like, in Facebook, when you write your post, it's like you're talking at the internet. So people wonder why you get in arguments, because you're talking at the internet. You're not talking with or conversing with somebody. So that's why when somebody puts something that's not, like, to your liking, you're like, oh, rah, delete. Get out of your chair, get out of your behind the computer, go and meet with these people. Seek to understand. Don't talk at them. You're not going to win somebody's heart by talking at them. Remember I said blah, 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 blah? Danny knows this, is that when she says something and I know it's an excuse, my face probably says it is like blah, 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 blah. That's what happens when you talk at somebody. You have to be able to converse with them. Seek to understand. The third is, if you have something on your heart that you want to start, go do it. God's already told you to go do it. There is a website, so it's actually for you guys. It's gotten much easier to create a nonprofit organization. As long as the nonprofit organization has revenue under $50,000 for the year and for the foreseeable future years, you can actually, instead of filling out a full 1023 form, you can actually fill out what is known as a 1023 easy form. And I think it costs like $50 or $100 to start your nonprofit organization. Once you start it, go meet with people. Start telling them what you're doing, what you're trying to do for the kingdom. The fourth is, not all of our companies are nonprofit. We still want to make money. Start your company. You have a heart to make crosses. You have a heart to write a book. You have a heart to sing or do something to be able to reach more people for God. Start the company and then go do it. Just do it. It doesn't make sense for us to sit back. It doesn't make sense for the pastors and Pastor Keith and, you know, all of us to be pouring and pouring into you each and every week if you just don't just do it. So do it. Go teach. Go find conferences. Go find panels. You know, it's so easy. You know, students, we've got so many colleges around the city of Atlanta and Georgia that there are a ton of student organizations, LGBT organizations, you know, who are starving for just adults to speak to them, or professionals in their trade to speak to them. Students are really that next generation, and you know what? It's free. You don't have to pay for these places. They love hearing from alumni or other places. Go teach. That's what Jesus did. He went and taught. That's how you get better at your craft, is go teach people. Stop holding on to all the gifts that God has already placed in you. Stop holding on to them. Stop being selfish or lazy and go do it. You know, we take on a ton of pro bono cases because Pastor Deb knows that we've got to make time to still minister to those people. If you have a heart in your field to help Go do it. All of this comes down to what our call is. This is a great commission. Everybody should know it. It says, it's two versions, but I'll read the NIV. It says, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe everything I have commanded you. And remember, I am with you always to the end of the age." We're made in the image of Jesus. He actually is going to be with us in everything that we do. So remember, as you're stepping out, know that Jesus is with you. Get outside of that box. Jesus will give you the words to say. You know, half the time Pastor Keith and I are here praying for folks, we don't know what you're dealing with, but definitely God continues to give us words to pray for you guys. Same thing. If we could do it, you surely can do it. If we can do it, that means you've got the same spirit that God has. Stop leaving it up to the people in the front row to do it for you or to the worship team that's doing it for you. What's the worst thing that can happen if you raise your hand in praise and worship? What's the worst thing that can happen if you said, you know what, God loves you?
Thank you.